RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You can also listen to our broadcast every day on frequencies of 15150 kHz, 9525 kHz, and 11785 kHz.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to our English program over Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Today's edition will bring you first our news, followed by press review, today in history, focus, headline news, and news in brief. We'll continue our segment with Indonesian Wonder and Miscellany. To conclude our program for today, we'll present to you our daily segment, Music Corner. That was our program summary for today. This is Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Stand by now for the news.
Voice of Indonesia with the news.
Here is the news first, the headlines. Indonesia revives Asian-African New Strategic Cooperation. The 60th commemoration of Asian-African Conference is an important agenda. Governor Basuki to seize MRT project for AAC. Now the news in details. Indonesia schedules discussions on efforts to revive a new strategic partnership between Asian-African countries. According to the Director General of Information and Public Communication, Ministry of Communication and Information, Freddy Tulung, the discussion efforts to revive a new strategic cooperation between Asian and African countries will be included in one document that will be discussed and approved in series of conference of the 60th commemoration of Asia-Africa Conference 2015 in Jakarta and Bandung. According to Freddy, later, the documents will be part of efforts to institutionalize cooperation of Asian-African countries. There are at least 8 agenda included in the discussion of efforts to revive a new strategic partnership of Asian-African countries, including counter-terrorism, transnational organized crime, food security, energy security, women's empowerment, and education cooperation.
Reinvigorating the new Asia-African strategic partnership. This is actually a form of how do we institutionalize the cooperation under the Asia-African Conference. So there will be around 8 major agenda. There are the issues is related with several activities. How do we exchange information related to counter-terrorism? And then secondly, also related with organized crime. And then thirdly is food security, energy security, women and gender empowerment, close cooperation among high education university, among Asian and African university. Those are among others the agenda which will be discussed during our afternoon.
Furthermore, Freddy Tulung said, in addition to documents to revive a new strategic cooperation of Asian and African countries, the 68th commemoration of Asia-Africa Conference in Jakarta and Bandung will also discuss 2 other documents, namely Bandung Message and documents on Palestine. According, the third document has been prepared since the beginning of 2015 and has been through the mechanism of discussion at the United Nations for approval on the commemoration of Asian-African Conference this year. Freddy hope all countries attending the conference will be able to give approval for the 3 documents so as developing cooperation between countries in Asian and African continents. More than 3,500 participants, including heads of states, ministerial-level officials, and representatives of international organizations, will attend a series of the 60th commemoration of Asian-African Conference in Jakarta and Bandung on 19 to 24 of April 2015. More than 1,000 of journalists have also signed up to cover the international agenda. The international event is certainly an important agenda that will not be missed by media, both local and international media, as noted by Tim Young, a journalist from China's Economic Daily.
I believe this year's AACC event is a very important event, not only to the Indonesia, but also to all the other Asian and African countries. And there will be so many foreign journalists come to Indonesia to report this big event, and we wish it will be a great success.
Meanwhile, Nigeria's ambassador to Indonesia, Muhammad El Sulaiman, said the commemoration of Asian African Conference is very important for Nigeria. He said that in 1955, Nigeria participated in the Asian African Conference and witnessed how Indonesia led the conference. He also said the Asian African Conference has given a lot of assistance and support to countries in Africa to fight for their independence.
Well, the commemoration of the Asia-Africa Summit, which is starting on 19th, is of great importance to Nigeria. Even though Nigeria did not participate during the 1955 conference, we have been watching with keen interest the conference, during the time in 1955, and we have been following developments after the conference. So the conference or the commemoration is very important to us because it reminds us of the time when Asia, under the leadership of Indonesia at the time, was able to gather around African and Asian countries. At the end of the conference, they gave us moral support, which the conference that actually took place in 1955. So about 1960, 5 years after the conference, the result of the moral support we got from the Bandung conference, most of the African countries became independent. So the conference assisted us by giving us moral support to ginger us and then encourage us to struggle for our independence.
The 60th anniversary of the Asian African Conference has become the world's history that can remind the international community of the important role of the conference for countries in Asia and Africa to promote cooperation in various fields in the two regions. Jakarta Governor Basuki Cahayapurnama has guaranteed that the constructions of the capital's Mass Rapid Transit MRT project would not stem the 60th anniversary event of the Asian African Conference. He added the project would cease during the event, as keeping it operational would affect the city's aesthetics. Governor Basuki said that other preparations were underway as the AAC was just around the corner, such as the repair of sidewalks and crossing bridge. As for security and traffic management, Ahok said it was part of the police authority, except for the suspensions of the city car free day on Sunday, April 19, 2015. The head of traffic management at the Jakarta Transportation Agency, Yayat Sudrajat, said the planned suspension aimed at ensuring the smoothness and security of the AAC. To compensate for the absence of the car-free day, Yayat said the Senayan and the National Monument areas would be designated to cater the people seeking to go out for an exercise when the AAC was afoot. This news comes to you from RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. PT Pertamina is set to launch a new kind of fuel with 8892 octane on May. However, spokeswoman for Pertamina, Wianda Pusponegoro, said that Pertamina will not erase premium fuel in the market. Wianda added that Pertamina will not reduce premium supply and distributions. Instead, it will evaluate premium customers. Nevertheless, she claimed that the Oil and Gas Management Reformation Team has recommended premium elimination. However, such thing needs to be administrated gradually. Head of the National Entrepreneur Association of Oil and Gas, Hiswana Migas, Eri Purnomo Hadi, said that the new fuel can help boost gas station owners as it offers profit margin of 375 rupiah per liter. He added that the new fuel that ranges between premium and Pertamax is a brilliant corporate strategy from Pertamina being responsive to market's demand. Around 1,702 personnel of the Public Order Agency, Satpol PP, were deployed in securing the 60th Asian African Conference AAC, which falls on April 19 to 24, 2015 in Jakarta and Bandung. Thousands of personnel are spread to swipe the street vendors, ranging from Soekarno-Hatta Airport, Halim Perdana Kusuma, Jakarta Convention Center JCC, to Presidential's Palace. Head of City Satpol PP Kuku Hadi Santoso said that the personnel are asked to participate in maintaining the security and order outside of the venue during the conference. For instance, at the delegation's hotel, pedestrians' bridge, as well as along protocol roads which are passed by the delegation. Santoso expressed in accordance with Satpol PP's main task and function, his party will swipe the street vendor and people with social welfare problem known as PMKS, as well as secure the legal banner which transfers on roads. Santoso added Satpol PP's commission to welcome the delegation in Soekarno-Hatta and Halim Perdana Kusuma Airport by wearing the Balakrama of the Kingdom Troops uniform. Village Disadvantaged Regions and Transmigration Minister Marwan Jafar said that the ministry was aiming to provide internet access to 5,000 villages in the country this year. Marwan said he was optimistic that the target could be met in spite of funding problems. He said that the program was part of the government's project to connect rural regions in the country. The Indonesian Internet Service Providers Association, APGI, reported that the total number of internet users, both fixed and mobile, in the country had reached about 60 million by 2012, while the Central Statistic Agency, BPS, reported that a fraction of the 58% of internet users were connected via their cell phones. Last year, Communication and Information Minister Rudiantara said the existing internet infrastructure was ready for the implementation of e-government. Listener, that was the news from RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. Jointly broadcast by RRI Batam, I'm Nuka Kusumawati.
Here are various important events that occurred this week, compiled from various newspapers published in Jakarta, which are summarized in today's press review. I'm Dorot Pane. We start from Kompas. The newspaper, in its editorial, writes, "National examination no longer scary. All parties appreciate the decision to abolish national examinations as determinant of graduation. The authority, the evaluation of the students' learning outcomes are returned to the teacher. The sense exams, tests, or assessment in the process of teaching and learning activities are returned to the school." According to Kompas, because the national examinations that took place during this time ignores the process, criticism on the concept and implementation of national examinations have often delivered and always warm up before the close of the school year. When the national exam is no longer frightening, then how idealization of education persists and maintained? Kompas writes, "Maintaining the national quality is a necessity given the geographical conditions, social and others, but it requires the same minimum standards as an absolute requirement of national education." Kompas appreciates the new policy of national exam, especially the implementation of computer-based national exam starting from 580 high schools, an equivalent of 28,000 schools. "There were many obstacles on the first day, but as a breakthrough amid technological advances, it is a good start." According to Kompas, leakage is no longer a national issue. The cost savings can be made. It said the process of education evaluation is a must. The next review comes from Koran Tempo. In its editorial, The Daily writes, "Minister Susi and MV Haifa." Minister of Marine and Fisheries Susi Pujastuti's struggle cleaning Indonesian waters from illegal fishing is not easy. She does not only face the illegal fishers who are still at large, she also receives a backlash from those who were arrested. Last week, the owner of PT Artartika Segara Lines, which operates the vessel MV Haifa, reported Minister Susi to the Criminal Investigation Department of the Indonesian Police Headquarters. The owner of MV Haifa reported Minister Susi on charges of defamatory. Previously, Minister Susi did mention Haifa as illegal fisher. "The ship," said Susi, "operates in Papua and has been stealing fish." The owner, according to Susi, having great power, they dare to break all the rules and laws that exist. According to Koran Tempo, report does not make Minister Susi wary. The minister must press forward, proving that the ship was indeed doing illegal fishing. MV Haifa, which was captured in the waters of Merauke, Papua at the end of last year, was recorded as the vessel that caught the biggest fish in the history of illegal fishing in Indonesian waters. Not only sailing without shipping documents and did not turn on vessel monitoring system, in the hull of Haifa, it was also found 15 tons of shark hammerheads. This type of shark was protected. According to Koran Tempo, Minister Susi does not need to be afraid of to face the fish robber. Meanwhile, the police can even use the complaint of the owner of MV Haifa to check back the case of illegal fishing as asserted by Minister Susi. Here, the minister could trusting back the facts of crimes committed by Haifa. We end press review from Media Indonesia Daily. The newspaper writes, reviewing parliamentary police. As representatives of the people who are elected directly by the people, members of parliament are supposed to close with the people. However, in this republic, because of anomalies, members of the house actually want to stay away from the people. According to Media Indonesia, after building a high fence to separate themselves from the masses, they now want more and more away from the people with all manner of bulkhead. Most recently, a number of members of the house proposed the establishment of parliamentary police, unsparing, based on the document of draft design and concept proposal of the parliamentary police. It will later have more than 1,000 personnel with all facilities embeddable. Media Indonesia writes, the parliament building is owned by the people, which should be open to people who wish to express their aspirations. When members of parliament increasingly keep distance from the people, the more they forget that they are chosen to fight the interests of the people. According to this daily, the formation of parliamentary police is not appropriate nor necessary. To the honorable members of the House, this newspaper calling on the police to stop the intention to form the parliamentary police now. For the parliament, the firm security that is impenetrable by any threats is if they actually sided with the people and the interests of the people. Well, listener, that was today's press review.
Today in history. A compilation of several important events happened on this date in the past.
Hello listener, meet again with me, Ani Hasana, in our regular Today in History over RRI World Service Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. We start from an event on April 18, 1955, when Asian-African Conference began, the first large-scale Asian-African or Afro-Asian Conference. Also known as the Bandung Conference, was a meeting of Asian and African states, most of which were newly independent, which took place on April 18 to 24, 1955 in Bandung, West Java. The 25 countries that participated in the Bandung Conference represented nearly one quarter of the Earth's land surface and a total population of 1.5 billion people. The conference was organized by Indonesia, Burma, Pakistan, Ceylon or Sri Lanka, and India, and was coordinated by Ruslan Abdul Ghani, Secretary General of the Indonesian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. The conference's stated aims were to promote Afro-Asian economic and cultural cooperation and to oppose colonialism or neocolonialism by any nation. The conference was an important step toward the non-aligned movement. And the next event was in 1980 when Zimbabwe gained its independence. Following the Lancaster House Agreement, there was a transition to majority rule in 1980. The United Kingdom ceremonially granted Zimbabwe independence on April 18 that year. In the 2000s, Zimbabwe's economy began to deteriorate due to various sectors, including mismanagement and corruption, the imposition of sanctions such as, among others, the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act of 2001, following the switch from willing buyer, willing seller to fast-track land reform. Economic instability led several members of the military to try to overthrow the government in a coup d'etat in 2007. Prior to independence as Zimbabwe, the nation had been known by several names: Rhodesia, Southern Rhodesia, and Zimbabwe Rhodesia. And the last event was in 1996 when the first Kana massacre took place. The 1996 shelling of Kana, or the first Kana massacre, took place on April 18, 1996 near Kana, a village in southern Lebanon, when the Israeli Defense Force fired artillery shells at the United Nations compound. Of 800 Lebanese civilians who had taken refuge in the compound, 106 were killed and around 116 injured. Four Fijian United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon soldiers were also seriously injured. The attack occurred amid heavy fighting between the Israeli Defense Forces and Hezbollah during Operation Grapes of Wrath. A United Nations investigation later stated it was unlikely that the Israeli shelling was a technical or procedural error, which was based on video evidence showing that an Israeli drone was spying on the compound before the shelling. Israel at first denied spying on the compound but changed its version of the story after the video was made public. Israel categorically rejected the findings of the UN report concerning the incident. And listener, that was Today in History.
Today in History, a compilation of several important events happened on this date in the past.
Focus, daily news and events.
Listener, meet you again with me, Donald Money, in today's Focus. And the visit of Prime Minister of Norway, Erna Solberg, to Indonesia is the theme of today's Focus. Tuesday, April 14, Indonesian President Joko Widodo, or Jokowi, received the state visit of Prime Minister of Norway, Erna Solberg, at the Merdeka Palace. It was Solberg's first visit to Indonesia. In a joint statement after the meeting, President Jokowi explained that they discussed about strengthening bilateral cooperation. Jokowi also said Indonesia and Norway have a very different character when it is viewed from the geographical location, size of population, and economic capacity. Nevertheless, said Jokowi, Indonesia and Norway also have a lot of similarities in upholding universal values, such as democracy and respect for human rights. This combination makes a very close relationship between the two friendly countries and bring mutual benefits. President Jokowi said Norway was an important partner in the environmental field, the cooperation of human rights, energy, fisheries, and marine. In education, there is a collaboration of universities such as the Gajah Mada University, Bandung Institute of Technology, and Ibnu Sina Academy of Nursing. For foreign affairs, President Jokowi also explained both governments support each other to run as non-permanent member of United Nations Security Council and for Indonesia 2019 to 2020 period and 2021 to 2022 period for Norway. The two heads of state also exchanged views on the issue of the South China Sea as well as the situation in the Middle East. The two countries will also work together to train 25 plus women and 12 teachers from Afghanistan in Jakarta and Bandung. In the same occasion, Prime Minister Erna Solberg said they talk openly about human rights, including the matter of the death penalty. But Solberg did not explain her position on the policy. Prime Minister of Norway Erna Solberg, in her visit in Indonesia, took the time to meet the indigenous jungle people in Ulu Senawat, Bungo, Jambi. On Wednesday afternoon, Solberg was accompanied by the Minister of Environment and Forestry of Indonesia, Siti Nurbaya, and Jambi Governor Hasan Basri. The Prime Minister's journey was quite stressful. Besides the road was muddy, the rain also drenched roads since noon. Arriving at the settlement, Prime Minister Solberg had a dialogue with the jungle people through a translator with the Minister of Environment and Forestry to determine the actual life of the jungle people at the past and present. On that occasion, Prime Minister of Norway said it was important to find ways to protect forests and how the jungle people to survive in the woods. Meanwhile, Indonesian Minister of Environment and Forestry, Siti Nurbaya, said from a meeting with the jungle people with the Prime Minister of Norway, there were issues that could be learned and be thinking ahead to develop the government's policy. The issue was the position of the land, where the children of the jungle tribe feel in trouble after the presence of tree companies. In addition, the jungle tribe also lost their livelihoods, and many times they said they wanted to cultivate farmland. The minister also said that the findings in the field will be reported to President Jokowi so the president could issue a policy related to the jungle tribe. Their nomadic habits and hunting of them would remain a consideration. Well, listener, that was today's Focus.
Listener, coming up next, here is headlines of several dailies published in Jakarta on Saturday, April 18, 2015. We start from Kompas Daily, which writes simultaneous regional head election stage comments. General Election Commission KPU on Friday launched the first stage of simultaneous regional head elections 2015. However, a number of rules concerning the implementation of the election and budget availability still become a problem in most of the 269 autonomous regions that will organize the elections. The Commission Chairman Husnika Milmanik said, "The launching is an important moment for the history of the nation. For the first time, the regional head election in Indonesia will be held simultaneously, organized and structured." Meanwhile, Media Indonesia in its headlines writes Asian-Africa Conference strengthened global balance. Indonesian President Joko Widodo, when opening a limited meeting on Asian-African Conference at the President's office in Jakarta on Friday, said he would convey a new order message, namely justice and global balance, to the world in his speech to the 60th commemoration of Asian-African Conference, scheduled to be held from April 19 to 24. The new order aims at answering the unequal world situations due to the absence of justice. Indonesia, he said, will take on the role of realizing justice and global balance. The president said the United Nations, which is expected to make justice and global balance, has not yet played its role. The heads of states gives Iraq as an example. We end today's headlines with Republika Daily, which writes Ministry of Education delays repeating national exams. Minister of Education and Culture Anies Baswedan said there is no plan to hold repeating national exams. He reasoned it is still waiting for the scanned results of the exams in Aceh, which tests are the same with that of uploaded in Google Drive account. The exam problem uploaded in Google Drive is exam for high school majoring in science for Aceh and Yogyakarta. Anies will see from the two regions, namely in Yogyakarta and Aceh. He said that if there is fraud, the ministry will decide to hold the repeating national exam. Well, listener, that was today's headline newspaper that we are taking from several newspapers in Indonesia. I'm Nuka Kusumawati. Thank you for listening.
Voice of Indonesia can be heard daily through audio streaming at www.voi.co.id.
Welcome back, listener. Here is news in brief. Jakarta Governor Basuki Cahayapurnama has guaranteed that the constructions of the capital's mass rapid transit MRT project would not stymie the 60th anniversary event of the Asian African Conference. PT Pertamina is set to launch a new kind of fuel with 8892 octane on May. Around 1,702 personnel of the public order agency Satpol PP were deployed in securing the 60th Asian African Conference AAC, which falls on April 19 to 24, 2015 in Jakarta and Bandung. Villages, Disadvantaged Regions and Transmigration Minister Marwan Jafar said that the ministry was aiming to provide internet access to 5,000 villages in the country this year. Listener, that was News in Brief over RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. I'm Nuka Kusumawati. Thank you for listening.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta, presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You're still with us, RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, at en.voi.co.id.
You still tune to Voice of Indonesia broadcasting daily from Jakarta on the frequency of 95.25 kHz. You can also listen through our audio streaming at www.voi.co.id. Listeners, here is our next segment, Indonesian Wonder.
Let's listen to various information of Indonesian arts and culture in a daily segment of Indonesian Wonder.
Hello listener, it is a pleasure to meet you again in Indonesian Wonder. a daily segment featuring tourism, culinary, as well as arts and culture from various regions across Indonesia. I'm Steve. In today's edition, I will invite you to visit Solo, Central Java, to enjoy the Buntal Satay. Stay tuned. Listeners, Solo is not only known for its tourism and batik, but also culinary, which is guaranteed to be able to shake your tongue. In today's edition, we will introduce you to Buntal Satay. Actually, there are many vendors who sell Buntal Satay in Solo, but the popular and the legendary vendors are only several. For example, Goat Satay stall belongs to Bubejo in Loji Wetan. Many people say that this satay stall is a favorite place of Indonesian President Joko Widodo long before he was elected to be the Solo mayor. Listener, Buntal in Javanese language means wrap. So what is wrapped? According to a story, in the past, around 1948, Buntal Satay in Solo and Jogja was made by Lim Hua Yu. Lim created innovation from goat meat. Usually, satay consists of pieces of meat, which are skewered by bamboo. But Lim chopped the goat meat and wrapped it with goat fat and then roasted it in charcoal. The idea is to make the Buntal Satay is very smart because it makes hard goat meat to become a delicious dish. The goat meat is finely chopped and the vining is removed. As the result, all goat meat lovers can taste the smooth meat and free from goat typical aroma. Listener, when Buntal Satay was roasted, it will spread aroma which will arouse your appetite. The fragrant aroma is from Japanese original spices. After the chopped meat is formed, then it is wrapped with goat fat, then roasted on wood charcoal until cooked. The melting fat makes the taste of Buntal Satay different from usual satay. When serving the Buntal Satay, this satay is not served with the skewers. The skewers are released from the satay, so we can just cut the satay by using the spoon. Buntal Satay is then smeared with the sweet sauce. Some sauce and pickled cucumber and slices of raw onion are put on the plate. You will taste the delicious Buntal Satay. Listener, if you visit Solo in the Central Java, please do not forget to taste the Buntal Satay. And that ends Indonesian Wonder for today. We meet again tomorrow with another topic. Thank you very much for listening and sampai jumpa.
Miscellany on Indonesia, a segment featuring various actual information.
This is RRI World Service Voice of Indonesia with Miscellany, a regular segment featuring various aspects of Indonesia, including art and culture, customs and traditions, technology and environment, even lifestyle. Today's edition will be about Prabu Siliwangi, the king of the ancient Pajajaran kingdom. So stay tuned. Besides via shortwave, you can also listen to this program through www.voi.co.id. When 1014 was a period where the kingdoms in Indonesia began to grow, there are many powerful figures who began to emerge. One of the kings who was respected throughout West Java, even is still admired until today, is Prabu Siliwangi. Prabu Siliwangi is a name created by the people of West Java and Cirebon for Sri Baduga Maharaja. Prabu Siliwangi started the Sundanese era and ruled for 39 years from 1482 until 1521. The story of Prabu Siliwangi is very well known in the history of Sunda as the king of Pajajaran Kingdom. One of the ancient manuscripts that describes the journey of Prabu Siliwangi is the Book of Suwasit. This book was written in ancient Sundanese language on a piece of white tiger skin and was found in Pajajar Raja Galuh, West Java. Siliwangi itself is derived from the word sili, or substitute, and wewangi, or fragrant. So it means a substitute of Prabu Wangi, or the Fragrant King. When he was young, Sri Baduga was very famous as a brave and agile knight. He was the only person that could beat Ratu Japura when competing for Subang Larang, a Muslim woman who later became his second wife. Siliwangi's name was already recorded in Kropak 630 as a popular character in traditional pantun or rhyme. The script was written in 1518 when Sri Baduga was still alive. Prabu Siliwangi is mentioned in various versions of stories about the character who became a king in Pakuan. Sri Baduga is said to have an equal magical power to Wastu Kencana, who was his grandfather. From his first wife, Princess Dewi Kumalawangi, Prabu Siliwangi got two sons and one daughter. One of his sons was named Raden Kian Santang, who is converted to Islam. Raden Kian Santang then spread Islam in the West Java. Although he was successful in doing it throughout the region, Raden Kian Santang was unable to change the conviction of his father, who was a Hindu. To avoid conflicts with his son, Prabu Siliwangi, according to the legend, then used his magical power and changed Pajajaran Kingdom into a wilderness. Many believe this is why Kingdom of Pajajaran has not been found until today. Although many stories recorded the existence of the kingdom, not even the ruins or the remains of the royal glory is visible. It was this magical power which supposedly changed Prabu Siliwangi and his soldiers to become tigers. In the Batu Tulis inscription, it is reported that Sri Baduga was crowned twice. First, when as Jawa Dewata, he received Galuh throne from his father, Prabu Dewa Niskala. He was then was called Prabu Guru Dewa Pranata. The second was when he received the throne of the Sunda Kingdom from his father-in-law, Susuk Tunggal. That way, he became the ruler of the Sunda and Galuh kingdoms, with the title Sri Baduga Maharaja Ratu Haji di Pakuan Pajajaran Sri Sang Ratu Dewata. Well, that was miscellany for today, informing you about Prabu Siliwangi. Until tomorrow with another edition of Miscellany.
We'll meet again tomorrow with another Miscellany on Indonesia.
Music Corner, presenting various kinds of Indonesian music and songs from the Voice of Indonesia.
Hello listener of RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia, wherever you are. Welcome back with me, Steve, in the Music Corner, a musical segment which introduces you to Indonesian original music, either traditional or the modern ones. In today's edition, I will introduce you to Fia. But before knowing more about Fia, to initiate the Music Corner for today, why don't we listen to a song entitled Ada Rindu Ada Cemburu. Enjoy the song.
Sejak pertemuan itu, wajahmu selalu mengganggu. Senyummu menggoda kalbu, masih terasa hangat tatap. Jadi
Boy listener, that was the first song from Fia, entitled Ada Rindu, Ada Cemburu. Fitria Anggraini, or usually called Fia, was born in Jakarta on 12 February 1984. Her first album was Ada Rindu, Ada Cemburu, released in 2008. Together with Tere, Fia established Tinkerbell and released a single called Nol Besar or Big Zero. Fia exists in Indonesian music industry because she wants to emphasize her character as a singer who is also able to play guitar. An album entitled Ada Rindu Ada Cemburu was a new experience for Fia in the Indonesian music industry. Fia, who created all song melody, collaborated with a musician, Slamet Widodo, who was invited as the lyric writer of her songs. Voice listener, let's listen to a second song from Fia entitled CLBK. Enjoy the song.
Kita pernah saling cinta. Ada aku, ada kamu. Karena terlalu cemburu, tinggalkanlah cintamu. Ku menyesali hancur hatiku, hatimu. Kau memang tak bersalah, aku ku tak mau kalah. Kenapa cinta lama bersemi kembali setelah dilupa teringat lagi? Kenapa cinta semi kembali setelah terkubur hidup lagi? Lama kita telah berpisah, kekasih telah berganti. Kita pernah mencintai namun sudah melupakan. Ku menyesali hancur hatiku, hatimu. Kau memang tak bersalah, aku tak mau kalah. Kenapa cinta lama bersemi kembali setelah dilupa teringat lagi? Kenapa cinta lama bersemi kembali setelah terkubur hidup lagi? Kenapa cinta lama bersemi kembali setelah dilupa teringat lagi? Kenapa cinta lama bersemi kembali setelah terkubur hidup lagi?
Fia's hobby to write songs has attracted the attention of music observer Ben Sleo in 2004. Ben Sleo said that Fia is a singer who is capable to create songs and sing the songs. According to Ben, Fia's capability is a big asset to compete in the Indonesian music industry. Then in 2007, Ben invited Fia to make a recording. Fia hoped that her first album will be able to color Indonesian music world. She wants her music to be able to entertain and inspire all music lovers. Voy listener, to conclude our segment Music Corner for today, let's listen to two songs from Fia, entitled Ciuman Pertama, or in English, means the first kiss, and Inikah Cinta, or Is It Love? Thank you very much for listening, and sampai jumpa. Aduh,
Voice of Indonesia, let's make the world green.
Mengapa wajahmu membuat pelita bergetar cahayanya? Sukmaku terengut tanpa daya. Apakah ini namanya cinta? Apakah ini namanya cinta? Apakah ini namanya cinta? Apakah ini namanya cinta? Ku pandang Apakah ini namanya cinta? Apakah ini namanya cinta? Apakah ini namanya cinta? Apakah ini namanya cinta? Hatiku tercuri setelah sejalan.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia. RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia.
Informing, connecting, dignifying.
RRI World Service, Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta presents actual news and information as well as entertainment.
You can listen to our broadcast every day on frequencies of 15150 kHz. 9525 kHz and 11785 kHz for English program, or listen to audio on demand at en.voi.co.id. Send your criticism and suggestions to en.voi.co.id, or send your letter to Voice of Indonesia, RRI World Service, Jalan Medan Merdeka Barat, No. 4 and 5, Jakarta, or P.O. Box 1157, Jakarta 10011, Indonesia. And join us on Facebook, Voice of Indonesia, and Twitter, VoI Indonesia.